Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Pets and Vets Today. Today we welcome back veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. If you have a question about your dog or cat or other pet, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. During this holiday time, Thanksgiving, a lot of people will be spending it with the immediate family, maybe a pet. And it occurs to me that talking to your pet might be more interesting than talking to your uncle from Duluth. But that's another story. We'll keep your pets happy today on this program with Carrie O'Loughlin answering your pet questions. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets gets underway after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Pets and Vets Today, here to take your calls, is one of our favorites, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York, a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. If you have a question, give us a call early. The lines are already loading up. 800-348-2551. Is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or email us if you wish at voxpop@wamc.org. Just because you email doesn't mean your question will get through. It's generally first come, first served, so, you know, get it in there. We'll do our best. Dr. O'Loughlin, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Ray. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Nice to have you here. You know, it occurs to me that Thanksgiving is a time when we often feed our pets little scraps and whatnot from the table, especially if we're too lazy to get up and too full to feed the animal. What are, and I know there are some dangers, particularly with with dogs, but maybe with cats as well. What are some of the things that are okay to feed that dog, but not okay to feed that dog?
So, yeah, but in the veterinary community, we semi-jokingly call this pancreatitis weekend because we tend to see so many sick dogs after Thanksgiving. So dogs don't handle high-fat meals well.
Okay.
So the gravy and the, you know, I don't know, whatever else you put a lot of fat into, the stuffing, however you make your meals, and just a rapid change in food. It can really upset their intestinal tract. And sadly, pancreatitis, which is an inflammation of the pancreas, one of the main digestive organs, can run the gamut from just making the dog a little nauseous to being deadly.
Ouch.
So it really behooves people to, you know, if you want to give your dog a little scrap, you know, go with a little plain white breast turkey meat. That's really not going to be harmful. You know, don't give them the skin, don't give them the gravy, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And same with kitty cats. Kitty cats handle fat much better. And of course they love protein. So, you know, a little, unless they're in kidney failure or something where they're not supposed to be getting high protein, you know, a little bit of turkey breast, you know, if they want to give them a treat is fine.
Okay. Fair enough. This question came in before the show began and I thought it was an interesting one. I don't know if you can really give us an empirical answer, but here we go. This one's from Tom. Tom writes, when our dog Daisy hears the doorbell ring, she runs to the door, anticipating. When she sees the vet arrive, though, she makes an about-face and retreats as fast as she can. Also, our friends have a dog who, when it hears its owner call the vet on the phone, makes a beeline and hides. It knows. So is there a sixth sense in dogs we might not know, but they know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about the phone call part. That's a little odd, unless I don't know, they're got very good vocabulary and understand the word vet. But you know, certainly the vet coming to the door, I think, you know, they can probably smell right through the door, and they remember the odor of the vet, and they remember, you know, that we come with pokey things a lot of times. So you know, I used to work at a veterinary practice that was around the corner off of the main road, and we had so many clients say the dog was fine until I made that turn, and then they'd start, you know, getting worried. So, yeah, they have good memories for that. You know, we've been really working the last year in our practice to go what people are calling fear-free, where we try to do as many positive things with the dogs and the cats, you know, lots of treats and petting and trying to make it not a scary thing to come to the vet. So
okay, this one is from Mary Beth, and then we'll hit the phones. Mary Beth writes, my two-year-old Yorkie has had diarrhea and vomiting on and off for 2 weeks. Took her to the vet. They gave her metronidazole.
Nidazole.
She finished. She finished the first course, and then a day or two later got diarrhea again. I took her back to the vet. They gave her more medicine and recommended getting a sonogram because her other tests results were all good. When she finished that course a day or two later, she got diarrhea again, although I did give her a pork trachea treat, which she never ate before. She ate a bit of it. I have an appointment with my vet again Saturday. Do you think I should get a sonogram? Do you think the pork trachea might have upset her stomach? It's upsetting mine. I'm worried about her because she almost lost a pound and now weighs 5.1, and that's from Mary Beth.
Yeah, so if it was just the diarrhea, I would say you could probably do some other things first, you know, like, you know, maybe she's become sensitive to whatever food she's on. You know, there are other things. But with the 1 pound weight loss, you know, that's a lot in a little Yorkie. So in that case, the ultrasound might not be a bad idea. To make sure that there's not there. Certainly in Yorkies too, they are prone to getting certain types of intestinal diseases that can sometimes be seen on an ultrasound. Unfortunately, sometimes you need an actual biopsy. But they might be able to tell some things on the ultrasound, and they could do some changes with medication to give her some relief.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's our guest today. It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call or two before our first break. And Hill in Ashfield, Massachusetts, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi there. Hi, I'm sorry about that. I have a corgi about 14, 15 years old that is an obsessive floor licker. And I wondered if you had any suggestions of how to stop that.
Well, first question, one thing, you know, corgis, gosh, they can live forever. So 14, 15, that's, you know, unusual for a lot of dogs, but not necessarily for corgis. How long has the dog been doing this? Is this a long-standing issue or a new issue?
It's been going on for a few years.
Oh, okay.
Quite a few years.
Okay. So, you know, I have a dog that likes to lick things a lot. Sometimes he licks the couch cushions and things. And I think sometimes they're just, it's a soothing thing. It's kind of like, you know, little kids who suck their thumb or, you know, they're trying to just soothe whatever is you know, anxious about or, you know, just out of habit. Sometimes we see dogs licking things because their stomach's a little upset. So that's why I was wondering if it was a new thing.
It's all the time. You know, it's not, yeah, it's not just when he has an upset stomach.
Right. You know, it may just be something
he loves to do it after he eats.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it might just, he might be a soothing thing. You know, like some people that are a little nervous twirl their hair or, you know, whatever. Tap their foot. It may be something he's just trying to calm himself. But it, you know,
nothing
I'm
can
not
do.
100% sure on that one for
all
sure.
Right.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Hey, good luck. We appreciate the call. Over to Tim in Great Barrington. Tim, you're on with Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi. I have a corgi as well. I have a 10-month-old puppy, and she has very long nails. I tried having some success at trimming the nails on my cats. I thought I could do it with the dog, and I trimmed very carefully one nail. Didn't come at all close to the quick, and it was she spazzed out. And I'm wondering, is that something that that I can do myself? Can you advise on how to get to that point? Or should I just take her to a groomer, which I prefer not to do?
Right. So, you know, if you have a dog, I'm assuming, does she have the nice white and pink nails so you can see where to trim?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So You know, what you need to do is try and make nail trimming as positive experience as you can. So we like to find nice, what we call high value treat, something that she really, really loves. We find a lot of times in the animal hospital, peanut butter works really well. And you can smear peanut butter on a surface that you don't mind getting peanut butter on, and just let her have at it and lick, 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 lick. And then if you can do it without touching her feet as much as possible, I also find that is helpful. And just kind of do one toe at a time, and then lots of happy praise. And then if you can get another toe, and maybe at first you only get one or two toes done a day. But, you know, don't make it a battle with her. Make it as positive experience. And then over time she'll be like, oh, it's peanut butter day. I'm going to get my toes done, you know. You know, or whether it's a little piece of hot dog or whatever you need to do to make her really, really happy. And just don't make it a huge ordeal. And certainly with a 10-month puppy, you've got her early enough that you can work with her and hopefully get it to be a pleasant experience.
Thank you. But how do you do it without touching her feet?
Good question.
Isn't that sort of the point? Yeah.
Well, it depends on the type of clipper you're using. They make some nail clippers that are sort of open claw-like. So you can sort of come around the nail and clip it without having to get under the nail. We've been using those a lot lately, rather than the old-fashioned sort of guillotine ones. You know, or you just try not to grab onto her feet. They don't like to have their feet grabbed a lot. So, you know, gentle handling, just barely touching. You know, a lot of times less is better than more.
All right, Tim, we got to take a break here. We're overdue. Carrie O'Loughlin, our guest today. It's Pets and Vets. The number is 800-348-2551. A couple more emails in the bag, and then we'll go back to the phones in a moment. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, and Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets. The number is 800-348-2551. And Carrie, a few email here, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from our friend Ann in Adams, Massachusetts. Ann says, I have an 11-year-old beagle mix. In a few weeks, she'll be 12. She's still so full of energy. She's not a big water drinker, but when she's been playing, running around, and then drinks water, she throws it all up. I've learned to let her have a break between playing hard and drinking, which works. She doesn't get sick. But should I be concerned? And Anne wishes us all a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you too, Anne. I would not be concerned. It's generally not a good idea with any dog, after they've been running and playing hard, to let them drink a lot or eat right away, because, you know, they're... their stomach's just been, you know, shaken up by all the rough play. There's a problem in larger breed dogs called bloat, that the worst time it happens is after, you know, if they eat or drink right after playing hard. So I used to play Frisbee with my Labrador, and I always made him wait until he had stopped panting really hard before he had a big drink or had anything to eat. So I think the dog is fine. I think she just needs to do what she's doing and not let him drink a bunch right after he's
fair enough. This one's from Karen. Karen says, our 5-year-old Maltese has just been diagnosed with chronic kidney disease, possibly stemming from Lyme disease. Besides the kidney diet food, is there anything you can recommend for treatment? And that's from Karen.
Well, it really depends. If it's kidney disease due to Lyme, that's a whole different ballgame than just run-of-the-mill kidney disease, because there are treatments, medications that can be given if it's truly what's called Lyme nephritis. And that you normally can tell because the dogs are losing a lot of protein in the urine. So if the dog's not losing a lot of protein in the urine, it's got kidney disease and it just happened to test positive for Lyme, then I would just treat it as a regular kidney disease dog. And that is really diet at first. And medications are only added after certain problems start happening in the blood as it progresses. So if it's early kidney disease, really diet is the best thing.
All right. This one's from Mark. Mark says, my dog likes to bark and chase after squirrels, raccoons, anything that moves through my yard. I'm concerned about him being bitten by a rabid animal. My question is about rabies. Are there any wild animals that actually live all their lives as carriers of the rabies virus? And that's from Mark.
No.
Okay.
No, rabies is pretty universally fatal once any mammal gets it. Most of the smaller mammals, like squirrels and mice and chipmunks, they all can get rabies, but they generally die so quickly from the rabies that by the time they're acting rabid, they're dead.
Right.
So it's unlikely for an animal to get rabies from one of those animals. However, bats and raccoons, things, skunks, those are the main transmitters of rabies in this area.
All right.
And yes, if your dog is out and there's a, you know, skunk out in the middle of the day or a raccoon out in the middle of the day, you have to be concerned about rabies. But as long as your dog is vaccinated, the rabies vaccine is excellent. So your dog really has good protection.
Fair enough. Last one here via the email, and then we'll get back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin joins us today on Pets and Vets. This one is from Mary. Mary says, my son has a cat that he adopted about 6 months ago. He's 8 years old, spent a lot of his prior time out on the street. The problem is that when he gets food, he eats every bite and will then throw it up. A lot of vomit today on the program. They try to portion out his food and have even used a timed feeder for dry food. How can they convince him that food is not a scarcity that has to be scarfed down whenever it appears, or will he eventually adapt? And that's from Mary.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've definitely seen animals that had issues with food scarcity that never get over it. You know, they always think, oh, my God, there's food in front of me. I need to eat because I may never see it again. You know, and some animals do get over it. I guess for now I would keep doing what they're doing of portioning out the food so he doesn't eat too much too fast. And you just have to wait. It might take several years of him learning that the food's not going to, you know, disappear before they could leave more out. But, Only time will tell on that one.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin, our guest, and Muhammad and Troy. Muhammad, you're on.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You bet.
So my question is, I had a cat that lived for 12 years. And unfortunately passed away due to diabetes. I just wanted to ask, obviously diet plays a big role, but he played, you know, he ate dry food his whole life. I just wanted to ask what, you know, the common factors are of diabetes and felines, and if there's any way you can, any preventative steps you can take early on with a cat.
So yes, good question. So The thinking on diabetes in cats has definitely evolved over the years. I've been out of vet school now for over 20 plus years, and I was taught originally that cats got type 1 diabetes, like juvenile diabetes. And once they were a diabetic, they were a diabetic. Well, that has completely changed. And now we realize that cats really get type 2 diabetes, which means if you can alter their diet, you can often get them off of insulin. So I've had very good success with a number of cats where if you feed them a low-carb diet, which means no dry food, none, zero, and you even have to be careful with the canned food. I had a cat recently that was eating canned food with gravy, and that was enough to take it out of its diabetic remission. So you have to feed them a pate variety of canned food and with no more than 10 grams of fat, 10% fat in the food, and then you can often get them off insulin. So if you're looking to keep a cat from becoming a diabetic, really the best thing is feeding them a canned-only diet. I don't think you have to be too particular if they're not already a diabetic. Because most cats become diabetic because they get overweight, just like a human with type 2 diabetes. And most cats, if they're fed an all-canned diet, are not going to get overweight. So that would be my advice for preventing diabetes, is feed an all-can diet.
Mohammed.
All right, thank you.
You betcha. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
800
Sorry about your kitty.
800-348-2551. Greg in Hyde Park is on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Go ahead, Greg.
Hi, doctor. My cat was very healthy up until a few weeks ago, and he's an 8-year-old or 9-year-old cat that I got kind of third hand. So I don't know his total history, but the vets had always said he was in great shape and everything. But now, about a month ago, I brought him in for shots and for a flea treatment. I just asked them to put on the 3-month flea treatment. About a week later, he started klutzing out, getting really clumsy. And I noticed that one of his eyes was dilated. And I asked the vet if they might have put on too much flea treatment or whatever, because I thought it might be nerve damage. And they said no, that would have shown right away instead of, I guess it was about a week and a half before I noticed the symptoms. But on the other hand, I just don't know whether that's actually true. I thought, you know, it seemed like they put on a lot of that treatment, because I felt it myself when I was getting him out of the carrier. But anyway, they seem to think it's just an ear infection and that they're treating him for that. But what would you say?
Well, I will say I'm assuming the 3-month flea treatment was a product called Bravecto, which is relatively new on the market in the last couple of years, and it does seem it's got a little more volume than some of the other topicals. So it wouldn't surprise me that the cat ends up with a little bit of an extra greasy spot on the back of their head. I have never seen any cat have, we use quite a bit of the Bravecto. I use it in my own cats. And I've never seen anyone have any bad side effects from it at all. So I would be much more leaning towards, you know, something like it could be the ear infection or even a little mini stroke of some sort that affected his eye. So,
really,
you know, hopefully it'll resolve, you know, whatever it is. I would also say in general, we get a lot of people with cats who say, you know, really, they were great, you know, a week ago and now, you know, like the wheels have come off. And that's because cats don't like to show you that they're sick. So we unfortunately get a lot of cats who've been walking around with an issue and you know, the next thing you know, they're falling apart. We had a cat not too long ago that came in for an annual exam and it was fine. And a week later, it was going blind and it turned out it had high blood pressure.
Wow.
That, you know, just came out of the blue. So, that is one thought, is you might want to get the cat's blood pressure checked, because that cat has done great since we've been treating its blood pressure and it can now see again. So
that's great.
Really?
All right.
Well, thank you, doctor. I appreciate it.
Greg, thank you for the call.
No problem.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, our guest today on Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Karen in Niskayuna is on. Karen.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Dr. O'Loughlin. Thanks for being here today. And I need you to help me help my cat so I can help myself, because watching her is stressing me out. She has an ear that itches almost incessantly. And I've had her in and out of my vet, whom I adore. And he has treated her with Trazoderm pretty much to no avail, in the sense that it gets better for the duration that she's on it, and maybe for a week at the most after that, and then she's just right back at it again. I've also tried the over-the-counter stuff, the Zymox Otic, and kind of with the same effect, although she seems to tolerate it better, I think probably because it's not refrigerated. She hates the other stuff. And I just feel like I'm at wit's end with her. She's 17, and she has other stuff going on and really doesn't need this, nor do I. She's scratching all night long. Do you have any suggestions for us?
Yeah, you know, I definitely see there are some cats who develop these chronically itchy ears. And I don't know if your cat also has a lot of ear wax in that ear.
No, very little.
A lot. Okay. But some cats just get this itchy ear. And I find sometimes it just needs chronic treatment. You know, I'll often have people do the either the Zymox or the or Trezoderm or Otomax or any one of these ear products, but do it like every 3 days or, you know, just a couple of times a week, just a drop or two, just to keep that itch level down. And especially in a 17-year-old cat, you just want her to be comfortable. You know, so
I know. Thank you for saying that. I just want to bring her comfort. And this is so incessant for her. And she scratches it until her ear is bleeding. And then there's that, you know, which can't feel good.
Yeah.
And so, all right. Well, I had wondered about the Zymox because the indication is for 7 days. So I didn't know how strict that was. So I thought maybe I would ask if I could do it more often. Yeah.
At her age, I don't think you're going to hurt anything. And just a drop or two, maybe. Pick 2 days of the week and just do it and see if I can
do it.
Happy.
Okay. Well, good luck. All right. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
No problem.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York. Marion Beacon, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you about my Basset Hound. I have a 9-year-old Basset Hound, and she gets a lot of exercise every day, and she's in good shape. She's about 60 pounds, and I noticed the last couple of months when she wakes up in the morning and she starts to, you know, lift herself up off her bed, she has a little trouble in her hips. Once she stands up and starts walking around, she's fine, but I notice that she seems to have the stiffness in her hips. And I'm kind of on a budget, so I'm a little nervous about going to the vet and getting some heavy-duty pain medication that costs a fortune. So somebody told me that you can give them aspirin for arthritis pain, but I'm a little nervous about giving them something that's not, you know, would not be safe. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, aspirin works as a pain reliever in dogs, but it will, if used chronically, give a dog an ulcer. So, that's something to be given to a dog like once or twice or a day or two at a time, and that's it.
Would it be like baby aspirin?
A dog, you're describing, I think, would do great with a glucosamine supplement.
Oh, really?
Okay, glucosamine. Okay. Yeah, glucosamine, chondroitin, these are basically the building blocks of cartilage and joint fluid. And if a dog has a little bit of mild arthritis, dog has a little mild arthritis, a lot of times that'll really help. And they make over-the-counter products that you can buy.
How much would I need to buy for a 60-pound dog?
Well, what I would recommend, I mean, you can go to, you know, a pet store or, you know, one of the online, you know, pharmacies, and because it is over the counter, I would recommend a dog product just because then they have the proper dosing. There's like Cosequin and Dasequin. There are a bunch of different ones out there. And you definitely want to do the loading dose. So they usually have you start by giving like a double dose for the first month or so. And that really does make a difference.
Wow. Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay. And the other thing, of course, is very important is weight control. So make sure they're not too chunky.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more before our next break. Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hey, thank you. I have a question about my cat. She follows me everywhere I go. I can't even go to the bathroom or take a shower without her being there. When I go down into my basement, it's one side is unfinished. Every time she goes down and into that side, she licks the concrete walls. And I don't know if there's some kind of nutrient or something she's getting out of it that she's not getting in her diet. Is it just like pica, like a nervous thing, or what would you suggest there?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know why I'm thinking this, but for some reason I think of concrete as potentially having a salty flavor. I wonder if it just, for some reason, she likes the flavor of it.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Maybe from the snow melt, leaving something on the inside of the concrete that's a salty bee.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's worried about it. I think she just likes. I think she just likes it. I don't think it's going to be harmful in any way.
Okay, because that's what I was worried about. Because I don't let her over there because I wanted to find out if there was something that could be potentially toxic in there, or if she just wants extra salt, or if it's just something to do. But she'll sit outside the door and scream if I don't let her in with me. So I've got to run around real quick. Yeah, it's my little fur baby. She's always with me.
That's nice. We got to take a break here, Jim, but thank you very much. It's an odd program. We started out with dogs licking floors. Now cats are licking walls. What fresh hell will be next? Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Pets and Vets. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us, and the number to call is 800-348-2551. Lines are completely full at the moment. If you hear somebody hang up, that would be a chance. Just two emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones for the home stretch, Doctor. This one is from Norm. Norm says, our four-year-old mini schnauzer loved to go on walks, but the incessant fireworks in Albany this past summer always scared her, and she would immediately pull the leash and run back home. Now she's afraid of any noise while walking, even a car door closing. Is there anything we can do to boost her courage?
Well, what I usually try and have people do in those situations is, again, positive reinforcement. So, you know, you get that high-value treat I talked about earlier, the hot dogs or the, you know, something you can carry in your pocket that she's really going to love. And I would just, you know, start off by when you're walking her, just every few feet or so, give her a treat and then, you know, make it very positive. And then at the first hint of a sound or her looking worried, give her a treat so that instead of it being a scary thing, it's a positive thing.
Okay.
And, you know, make it tiny treats because you don't want to make her super fat. But it may take a while of doing this, but you just want to make it a happy thing and not a scary thing. So have her, you know, think about the noise, meaning I'm going to get a treat instead of it being a scary thing.
Okay, this one from Jean. My 11-year-old female blue tick coonhound has been losing weight. She has had a checkup in September. Everything seemed fine, but her weight is definitely down. She's hungrier than usual. She's been on a grain-free diet for a long time. I'm starting to feed her more and trying to mix it with food with a higher protein and fat content. She also seems more demanding of my attention and is barking more. Definitely a behavior change for a mellow hound. And that's from Jean.
I missed how old the dog was.
11.
11. I mean, sometimes as dogs get older, they just don't get as much out of their calories that they take in, out of their food. I've noticed my older dog, I've had to increase his feeding amount to keep his weight up. So I guess if everything was checked out at the vet, I would just, you know, increase the calories, increase the food a little bit.
Okay.
And then sometimes adding, as long as their kidneys are working fine, everything else is fine, cooked egg a couple of times a week. It's a nice protein source.
All right. Oh, last thing here from Susan and Hadley just reminds us that squirrels are not a vector for rabies.
Right. That's because they die from rabies before they get a chance to give it to anybody.
Fair enough. Back to the phones we go. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest and Susan in Berkshire County. Susan, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Hi.
I had two pugs. They both died in 2019, but I heard the beginning of the show, and I do believe that animals have a sixth sense. My husband used to go to work. He's a software engineer. He would come home at a different time every night, and quite reliably, 10 minutes before he came home, whether it was 6 or 9, the dogs would go berserk. I could tell the dogs would go berserk. He'll be home in 10 minutes. I think animals do know things.
I don't know how you could prove it, but maybe the hearing is so much better. In other words, I'll pull in the driveway and my cat is coming around the side of the house because she heard the car and she comes right up. She has heard the car maybe a block or two away. Maybe there's finer tuning of their senses.
Maybe. I don't know. I think they understand things. And I think with hearing those calls to the vet or seeing the vet at the door might have to do with the owner's anxiety.
Yeah, it's
possible. If they can tell that a person's about to have a seizure, I don't see why they can't, tell how we're feeling.
Right.
So.
Well, that's a very interesting call.
I miss my dogs, but thanks anyway for taking my call.
Hey, Susan, thanks a lot for that one. That's very interesting. Let's go now to who's been waiting longest. Looks like Larry in Canaan. Larry, you're on.
Hi, first, happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
And to you.
We have a 10-year-old golden retriever. 10 days ago, she was diagnosed with a hemangiosarcoma, meaning she had a sonogram. She has tumors. She has tumors on her spleen and liver. And where we're at right now, she has good days and bad days. There are days where she's peppy, she's eating. Then the next day, she'd be very lethargic, could be lethargic and not eating much. And then the next day, she could be peppy and eating again. Obviously, we don't want her to be in pain, but we also know her days are short, her stomach is distended. And so the question we're facing is, do we put her down before something tragic happens? Again, we don't want her in pain. How would we recognize that it's time? And God forbid we don't put her down in time. Will she be in pain at the moment of death?
That's a great question.
Right. I'm so sorry to hear this. It's such a lousy disease. I lost my own Labrador earlier this year to it. So the problem with hemangiosarcoma, so basically it's a cancer of blood vessels. And that's why it goes after very blood-filled organs like the spleen and the liver. The dogs can live very happily with it until something breaks and they have a bleed. They don't bleed externally. They bleed into their belly. They can have small bleeds and that's what you'll notice. They have a bad day and then they perk up and have a good day. Is they can have these little bleeds, but then they reabsorb the blood. So it's tough, because they can go, some of these dogs can go for months. And it's one of these things where you have to decide, do you want to not take a chance on her having a crisis, in the middle of the night or on a weekend, versus, then the downside of cutting her life shorter than it might be.
Right.
We don't think of this disease as being terribly painful. But what happens is if they have a bad enough bleed, they can basically get scared and almost like panic because they feel like they can't catch their breath because their blood pressure is dropping and they feel weak. So it can end up being kind of an emergency situation if they have a bad enough bleed where you have to get her, to an emergency clinic or, call it at home euthanasia vet or something like that if your vet's not open. So I'm afraid I don't have the perfect answer. It's a tough one. It is a tough one. One thing you might want to consider, I don't know if your vet brought this up. There is a product out there. It's a Chinese herb called Yunnan Bio.
Sorry to interrupt. She's been taking that every day, and in fact, we think that has actually helped with the clotting, and
yep.
the the funny thing is, I mean, there is always humor in tragedy, but the directions on this Chinese box, the English directions, the little English there is, say secret Chinese ingredient. So that's the extent of what it says, but it seems to be working, or helping,
good,
I should
good.
Say.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, there is no perfect answer when to put this dog to sleep. You know, so if she's generally having good days, you know, I personally, if it was my dog, I would take the chance. You know, unfortunately, with my husband and I did the same thing with our dog, and finally at midnight one night she wasn't doing well, and you know, we took her in. You know, sometimes I wanted to get as much time as I could with her.
No, what we're hoping is she's going to tell us, which has happened with previous dogs. Anyway, I'll let you go. I know there are other callers. Again, thank you for your advice, and happy holidays to you and the
good
listeners.
Luck with her.
Cheers.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, Larry. We appreciate it. Mary in Pittsfield. Mary.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. I have a Chihuahua mix, a long-haired white Chihuahua mix. He's about 8 years old. I've had him for 7 years. When I first got him, he had this kind of pinkish, reddish ooze coming out of his eyes that would stain his hair and his face. Oh, excuse me.
Okay.
And I gave him some of that angel eye stuff that made it go away right away. But now I tried that again, and it's not going away, and I wonder what causes that, and what can I do to make it better?
The staining of tear staining in light-colored dogs is very common, and it's a reaction between the tears and the fur. The angel eyes, and there's also an antibiotic powder called Thailand powder. They used to, back when you could get tetracycline powder, that was another one you could use. It just alters the chemical nature of the tears so that they don't stain. I'm not sure why the angel eyes worked and then it is no longer working. So I don't know if something has changed in your dog's tears. Hmm. It's just a cosmetic issue.
Yeah, it is. He's fine, but I just would like it to go away for him.
Yeah.
And me.
Yeah. I mean, you could ask your vet if they have Thailand powder and you could try that instead and maybe it'll work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mary. Okay. Why did they stop putting out tetracycline powder?
It's just really hard to find a lot of tetracyclines, period.
Really?
Yeah.
We don't know why?
I don't know. It's a human product issue.
Very interesting.
I guess.
Okay, let's see here. Cindy in Putnam Station. Cindy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a comment before my question. It's a quick comment. I'm a vet tech, and I used to do dog training. One thing that I told my clients was to give your dog a massage for a few minutes every day, starting at their mouth and opening up their flap, you know, massaging their gums if they would let them, and just do that from nose to tail.
Yeah.
Make it really positive, make it really nice, give them lots of treats, but especially it was for nails, handling the feet.
Ah.
And I found I had a lot of that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
My question is, I have an 8-year-old pit bull who has been diagnosed with sarcoma. It was acute onset. It's not in her left axilla or armpit, but it is in that general direction. And the mass has increased in the past few weeks. And I'm wondering if the doctor could just give me sort of a second opinion on having a sarcoma removed and what the chances are of it coming back.
So I take it came back as a general soft tissue sarcoma?
Yes, soft tissue sarcoma. She didn't do a punch biopsy, but that's what it came back as. But what I have noticed is this was diagnosed in mid-October, and it has almost doubled in size since then.
Ooh, yeah. So, you know, soft tissue sarcomas, unfortunately, so they're a connective tissue cancer. And the problem is they tend to, they don't necessarily are ones that are going to spread all over the body in general. Some of them can, but a lot of them are just what are called locally invasive. So the big question is it in an area that you can get enough tissue around it that you can get all of it? Because otherwise it is more likely to come back.
Yeah, and
so,
it is,
you know, without
a difficult spot. But my question is, if they go in and they get it and they don't get enough, does it really come back in the same spot? And if it does, what are the chances of a successful second surgery? In other words, to just keep taking the tumor out.
Yeah, so you can either, you know, follow up with a second surgery if you don't get clean margins on the pathology right away, or you could wait and see if it comes back. There are also, depending on if they can find out through the follow-up biopsy, once you get the whole mass out, they may have some more recommendations for potentially follow-up chemotherapy to keep it from coming back. A lot of the soft tissue sarcomas, some of them are responsive to chemotherapy and some things like radiation if you wanted to go that route. But a lot of times it ends up being you take it off, you cross your fingers, hope it doesn't come back. And if it comes back, you know, you potentially go in for a second time and see if you can get it out again.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I have absolute confidence in my vet. I just, I just wanted to have another.
Yeah, a second opinion. Sure. Well, Cindy, thanks a lot. We'll leave it there.
Dr.
Carrie O'Loughlin, I hope that you have a safe and happy Thanksgiving, you and the animals and the husband and
you
everybody
too,
else.
Ray.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Take care.
Bye now. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small-batch bourbons. Grapes and Grains Wine. Maximus. For 45 years, Maximus has been working with government agencies to simplify the process for communities to access programs like Medicaid and Medicare. Information available at Maximus.com. Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in management, natural sciences, hospitality, forestry, psychology, culinary arts, and more. Paul Smith's College. It's about the experience. PaulSmiths.edu. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Once again, thanks to the great Carrie O'Loughlin for joining us on this Pets and Vets. Thank you for listening. Apologies to the dozens of folks who couldn't get through today. We'll do Pets and Vets again very soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Jordan Yuxall. Our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Enjoy yourself. Don't, you know, if you're going to overeat, make sure you have some Alka-Seltzer or some Tums. We'll be back on Monday. And physical therapy with Matt Goodemote will be the topic. Meantime, stand by for 51%.